Testing 1, 2, 3, testing 1, 2, 3.
I'll be, I'm as tired now as I will be when I get through.
Well, I guess that's pretty fair then. And I'll just put, okay, for the record, this is Mr. James Steele. And today's date is Wednesday, May the 20th, 1998. And I guess we can just start off with basic questions. What year did you come to Hyman?
I came here on the last day of June, 1931, although I did not come to teach until the following fall, I mean, not that fall, 31, but 32. Mm-hmm. However, I spent the summer here, and I came with a fellow, Don West. He and his wife were, he was going to make a preacher, and in fact, I knew him in he was in the Divinity School down here at Vanderbilt, where I knew him when I was a student there, and knew him pretty well. I knew him at Lincoln Memorial too, but not well.
Right.
He was a great friend of Jesse Stewart's, incidentally. They were just almost twins for a long time, mm-hmm. although they fell out later in life, and on Jesse's part, he never could think of anything worse to say about Don. well, Don's another story.
Yeah.
However, he has one here too. He was here before.
Okay.
He had taught school here and eighth grade. Hmm. And his wife taught maybe third, anyway, the elementary. And there again, I knew her as well and at Lincoln Memorial. Well, I came, he was going to have a vacation Bible school. And he had his brother-in-law, Jack Adams, come. And later, somebody named, a young man named Fletcher, who was had had polio and was rather somewhat crippled. I don't know, remember much about him. I don't think he was here all the time. So what we did was to organize Boy Scouts at Massey, Upper Mill Creek, and Lower Mill Creek. And here. So it was four places.
So you came with him and organized that kind of together?
I didn't come with him. I arrived here.
Okay.
No, I arrived. I had come down, you see, I had just graduated from University of Illinois. Mm-hmm. And I had come down to, on the way home from Urbana Champaign, I stopped in Nashville and went out to Vanderbilt where he was a student. I learned that he worked part-time out at a settlement house.
Oh, okay.
in the city. So I went out to the settlement house and he was not there, but he was expected. And he did turn up and he invited me. So that's how I happened to come. Now, they knew I had this library degree here, and so the next year when the librarian retired, they asked me to come back and be the librarian.
And that was in 1932?
That was 32, the fall of 32. Well, when I came here, the school was out the week before, and they always retained the girls here. They remained, didn't go home for a week. They spent the week or whatever time it took, I don't know, maybe 2 weeks, cleaning these dormitories. Mm-hmm. Every inch, they scrubbed everything, every chair, everything that could be washed was cleaned up, and of course the library, which was in the old stone building at that time, every inch. This place was immaculate. That's one of the things they, at all times. They had plenty of help, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is in the depth of depression, you must remember, right at its worst.
Yeah.
And there were no jobs. So I don't think they were paying their teachers or could pay them. The only person people that paid were local hands, like old Doc Pratt, who had the big garden out here where the where the playground is now, all field. And they paid the principal. The magnificent sum of $200 a month.
So did you get paid for being librarian?
They didn't pay me anything. It was understood I was a volunteer worker. I think we were all maybe volunteer workers, except there was one teacher who lived here who was paid by the county. And that was the beginning of the county takeover, which took quite a long time. But you know, that was Smith. Can't think of her first name. Well, so we worked, in all those years, I can say to begin with. In all those years, well, right in the beginning, the way it was arranged was Miss Stone had semi-retired and had would come here commencement was always in June. She'd come about the middle of May, and she would stay until about October. And during the school year, and Miss Watts would go home to Massachusetts. But then the rest of the year, Miss Watts was the director. In those years, those 6 years I stayed here, and at a later time, the 7 years, about maybe 2 years I was here when we never had a conversation.
You and Miss Watts?
Not one. There was no reason for one. But you would have thought, you know, there'd been a little exchange of some sort. There were opportunities for it because in the last parts, I was called up a time or two. Now, the only reason you go to Miss Watts was because something needed to be done. Well, I can remember going and asking her, for something I needed or something, and the answer was no. Always, no.
Why?
Well, for example, if you want an example, I lived in Eastover up here, board dormitory. I lived in the corner room. It was a rather large room, very dark, of course, like everything was dark and brown, painted brown outside.
Yeah.
No matter. I lived in there, and there was a big fireplace. That's the way I was trying to think how the building was heated. But anyway, we had a fireplace. I think it was heated by gas, but no, it wasn't. It was heated by a furnace. Burn coal.
Mm-hmm.
But this room apparently didn't get the benefit of the furnace, so they'd have a little boy come in and build a fire for me in the morning. All right. In the corner, very close to the fireplace, was a big bookshelf. A big, great big deep bookshelf, about this deep. It was in the corner right toward the mantel. In this way. Well, when I had a fire, it was too close to the books or anything I'd put in that shelf. So I asked her if I might move that shelf back to the other corner of the room, where it'd be away from the fireplace. And she said, I quote her, "Certainly not." When I when I was here at first, I lived in that room, and I want to stay just like it was.
Well.
That was it. And the next time, somebody gave us a, she called me and said, somebody has given us a set of encyclopedias, world books. Now, we have a choice of colors, blue, red, or green. Well, I knew that the reference works were all old, were the practically worn out old dull books, you know, and one of them, yeah. Red is not my favorite color, mm-hmm. dang book, particularly, but I said, I think for it would liven that shelf up a little bit for there to be red. Says, well, we've already told them send green or blue, whatever it was. So I remember that. Of course, when I did go, I usually dealt with the secretary or something. I know we needed cards. These 3x5 cards, you have to buy them. They cost a dime a pack. And we couldn't buy the regular library cards. So I had a punch. You punch the holes in them, you know, to go in.
Yeah.
Okay. But to get a dime out of them was a federal case.
Why's that?
Well, they didn't have much money. I used to think they thought I was going to go down and buy a root beer or something with it.
They probably did.
Well, they're not too sure about that. I always felt she was very askance of me for some years. For one thing, I'd hardly got here. Within a week or two, they had Jockey Day.
What's that?
There used to be one day a year, the first day of court. They have these sort of days at Mount Sterling. Some of them are kept up.
Court days.
Well, court day, but they call it Jockey Day here.
Okay.
Court day. And that time, women all stayed home. Everybody got drunk in town. You didn't go to town. And out here, we had a big bridge. But anyway, they'd run their horses, swapping horses, you know, right in there. There's pictures of that. Running in, they run up and down. One thing, another one time, somebody was killed down there. But anyway, what was I going to tell you? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you said right.
One time, one of the boys, we had a cook over in the assistant cook over in the dining room, and my brother came to see her. That day, he was a young man, maybe 17, 18 years old. And one of the students saw him, and he ran and told Miss Jones, the house mother, that there's a drunk man here on the campus. Well, she didn't ask any questions. She just, you know, if she was, he was drunk or not. And she said, run and get the sheriff. So he ran downtown, and the sheriff, and the town marshal, and ran up here, and the deputy ran up here, and the boy saw him coming, and he ran. Well, school was out at that time, and I was crossing the bridge over here. It's coming away from schoolhouse, and here the boy was going up, running way up the hill, and they were shooting at him. Well, I knew that they didn't, too far, he didn't get him. But then the young deputy, who may have been about 30 years old, he was climbing up the hill, and he fired, and the boy was trying to climb a fence up there, and he shot him in the back, and he fell backward. So they took him away, and he died that night. And then there was a big... Here I was, there's a lot of people saw this, but only me and Morris Sloan would admit it, were witnesses.
Nobody else would admit they saw it?
Yeah. So we were in trial, and so naturally they were very disgusted that I was getting them into trouble, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in the doghouse here for quite a while, I felt. So I was in the court and all that sort of thing down there. In fact, I was told to stay out of town. I was a witness. They didn't want, and they might kill me, you know.
Goodness gracious.
So I did stay out of town, as these do.
That's how it was.
Okay, that takes care of that.
Let's see. When you first got to the settlement school, when you first got here, what was your first impression of the place?
I don't know that.
Do you remember what the campus looked like?
Yeah, I do remember it, but I can't describe it. It was all wooden buildings and all painted brown.
But you said it was really, everything was immaculate and clean.
Scrubbed. Oh, yes, goodness. If anything, overdid it. But they had an explanation for that. We're trying to make a point with these students. And they used to say, if you were going somewhere in this county, if you passed a house that flowers in the yard and all swept and everything, a Hyman Selma student had been lived there.
Well,
you'd always, that's what they used to say.
Mm-hmm.
And it was true.
Let's see. Yes, you talked about Miss Watts, things you remember about her. I wanted to get, I guess, some things that you remembered about, I don't know exactly the people that were here when you were here. Maybe
Well, Miss Kiesel, who a teacher Saturdays that we ate three meals a day here.
Mm-hmm.
Sunday evening, it was sandwiches generally. And the tables were pushed back, and the chairs were lined up, boys on one side and the girls on the other. And they sang hymns. And they had a little choral reading, and maybe a prayer, I don't know. And we ate our sandwiches and had milk to drink. And in later times, it might be an orange, which somebody might send some.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things about it is, I never have any recollection of being satisfied with the food here.
Oh, really?
No, never did. We had things that we don't ever think about cooking now.
What did you eat?
We had beaten biscuits here, and with ham, And they had this big garden, and the girls canned, they canned Lord knows how much. And they had cows and had plenty of milk. And everything was cooked well, and we had a chicken yard out here. That's the reason we called Mrs. Earp's house chicken house, because he was right below there. Right, that included where she lived there.
Mm-hmm.
She never did like that.
I'd say not.
Chicken house. I don't know why not. I kind of like that, don't you?
I think it's cute, but not.
Yeah. Creekside is too.
Yeah, it's
too expected,
Yeah.
Well, Miss Kiesel, or teacher sat at each table. There's at least one teacher. Sometimes there were two.
Or when you ate, there were.
Yeah, three times a day. And you were there. You expected to be there. You were assigned a chair. And those days, of course, no radio, no TV. No, and no newspapers. Of course, we had them in the library. But the teachers were, for the most part, graduates of Wellesley.
Mm-hmm.
Not all together. I remember one from Smith College and maybe some other colleges like Holyoke and Radcliffe, maybe, and Bryn Mawr. Seemed Vassar, maybe. I remember once from Vassar. But and the nurses both times were from Pennsylvania. And this was a hospital up here.
Right, the Stuckey Building.
Mm-hmm. And it was a hospital with beds. And in the back was a extension, I don't think it's there anymore, which was the home economics classes were taught there. It was a kitchen. And it happened that the after Smith left here, and there's a man, Potter, came, and I'd been in school with him at Lincoln Memorial. And he was attending George Peabody when I was in Vanderbilt. Mm-hmm. So he, after Jeff Smith left, Jeff Smith was here for many years. And he lived right where the parking lot is. There's a house there. At that time, up in the curve, you go up my house, just in the curve, the road stopped up there. Oh. There was a house, and Jethro Amberg lived there.
Oh, yeah.
And there was a cabin, we called a cabin, a log house, which was used to build the office out here, was there. And there's a path going along. He was there, and in the, out the middle of that place out there where the ball court is, there was this log house. Mm-hmm. It had been moved from down every branch long ago, but the water got up every 2 feet times a year and was rotting the logs, and they moved it, have it up here. It was just a later time after my pet went away from here when they made an office out of it.
Oh, okay.
There was a privilege to be here, because out of Clare I learned so much from these other teachers. They were older generally. I was the youngest person here. Mm-hmm. And I think I was the only man. No, I wasn't. Sometimes after Jethro left, there was a man teacher here. Not many, just a few. Devon Pratt was here, and Potter's. Jethro didn't eat here. I know not many men, but a few.
For the most part, it was women teachers.
Yeah, nearly all.
Yeah.
And they taught during the day, and they tutored at night.
So it's like the kids were constantly learning or doing something.
Oh, yeah. Oh, work. They all had jobs. Oh, they had to get up before daylight, cook the meals. The girls cooked, of course, under supervision. Some had a looms down here, not many, in the log house. And they had to get three girls who worked for me in the library. Each dormitory had girls who looked after it. That big in section who looked after East Over, which was right out of here. It was a girls' dormitory with some teacher living downstairs. So we had breakfast at 7 o'clock.
Wow.
And you had to be there. Lunch was at 12 noon, and you had to be there. Supper was at 6, and you had to be there.
Everybody had to be there?
Everybody. The only exception was a fellow named Noah somebody. And he worked at the dairy. He was kind of in charge of the dairy under Ms. Burns. Uh-huh. And he had to do things about the cows, like drive them up the holler or do something about it. So he had permission to be late. He was, however, they knew he had, he was sometimes late. And he sat at my table. And Mr. Keyes would always, she knew this, but there was an empty chair. She'd say, "Where's Noah?" She knew very well who he was. Mm-hmm. And pretty soon he'd come in. That went on week after week. "Where's Noah?" And one day I said to Miss Keitel, "I don't know her." and she never did. She never asked that again. She didn't like that.
So what if somebody was late that was supposed to be there? What
they weren't late.
Nobody was ever late?
I never heard tell of anybody being late.
I guess they just wouldn't get to eat, would they? Or
no, they'd have to go to the office.
So it probably was a lot better to be early.
No, yeah, the girls were already here. You know, they lived, well, some lived over Miss Watts up over the hillside. Upstairs was dormitories, downstairs was offices. And they were out here, you know. No, I don't recall anybody being late, except me, in time.
Did you get in trouble?
No. No, they didn't say anything to me. It wasn't a question of being late. I just took my time. Mm-hmm. I like for everybody to settle down, and then I can go and sit down. And they had big feasts on Christmas, Thanksgiving. You got to go home. A student got to go home twice a year.
That's all?
Whether you had a choice of going home Thanksgiving or Christmas.
Mm-hmm. You couldn't do both?
No. That's all you had, all these cows to milk. And for instance, to keep going so the, you know, the wouldn't freeze. And there's things to do here. So they decide. And I know, at Christmas, I can remember, even the teachers, I wouldn't want to go home to Alabama, but they wouldn't let, if school was out, let's say, on Thursday,
yeah.
And Christmas wouldn't be till Saturday, but I couldn't leave, I'd stay to be, go through the Christmas program. And I had to take the boys around before daylight, Christmas morning, and sing carols. And the dormitories.
To each dormitory?
Yeah.
Goodness gracious.
And all kind of things we did here.
So you lived, were you kind of like a helper with the boys when you lived with them?
Oh, Lord, everybody.
Or just everybody?
Everybody who was here had a second job.
Okay.
And that was taking care of these young ones. They weren't allowed, there was like a fence around this place. It was a little New England island, really. Such things going to town is unheard of. Even the teachers didn't go to town without reporting or getting permission. Yeah. It wasn't a place people went down there. You know, it was considered not a good place somewhere for people, women to be running up and down the street. You didn't see the women on that in town, hardly. But that changed in my second hitch here, could be it. I know one time at the table, I told Miss Watts about going to the drugstore one night where there's a fella had about 8 daughters and 1 son. And they sang old mountain songs. And all of them picked the banjos and others sang. And I went down and heard them perform in the drugstore. And then she said, "What were you doing there out at night?" I think I said, "Miss Watts, I'm a writer. I need experience. I need to go places and do things." Something along that old line. But I was never called out again. I was the one person who went out and go, you know, all kind of places.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know so you were on the staff officially for 6 years?
Or so? 6, but I was, I didn't have a dime. Of course, I was too proud to ask my folks for anything. And they had a laundry here. They did furnish the soap. They fed us. They had boxes of old clothes and things came in. I really was running out, but those clothes weren't meant for me. They're meant for students. I want to say about these people here, you knew that every penny that came in here went to the right place. There was never anything frivolous, you know, spending. I know when McLean was made director here, Miss Watts, was here, and he bought one of these things where he can dictate letters, you know.
Right, yeah.
Probably cost $100 or more.
Mm-hmm.
And Mr. Watts was very unhappy that he spent that money on a dictaphone.
What'd she say?
Oh, I don't know what she said. I can't quote her. I don't know.
Yeah,
I was just told that she was very unhappy about it. That's one thing about it. You had absolute faith in... I think the grand thing for me was the one thing, I never knew her to interfere in any way with the classroom. She never told me what to do or not to do, ever.
This is Ms. Watts.
Mm-hmm. I can't recall her ever being in the library except one time, and that's when had a meeting there to say, tell us she was going to retire. Sometime I recall, she might have come in, but I don't have any memory of it. Certainly, they never borrowed a book from there. No, we were on polite terms. And I don't think, if my impression was, the staff did not have much to do. These people up here in the office.
I do that all the time with mine. Okay, we're back on now. Yeah, it shouldn't matter, but I just thought about that.
Now, what was I talking about?
You were talking about quiet hour. Every day there was a quiet hour.
Yeah, and on Sunday, when I'd take the boys on hikes, we had to get away from here by 1 o'clock, and certainly not come back till that hour was over.
So y'all went on hikes.
That religious, yeah. In the fall, they would meet up here after supper in the big room, and they would read the diaries. Mr. Thorne and Mr. Anyway, the diaries of the early days, they read from them to us. And I remember one in the summer, when Miss Stone was here, we had a tea or something, maybe cookies, and I talked to Miss Stone, I remember. They were two, Miss Stone and Miss Watts were two diametrically opposed personalities.
How so?
Miss Stone was gentle and kindly and motherly, and just a very sweet nature, and very step assured though, but a lady.
Mm-hmm.
And Miss Watts appeared, you know, rather stern and official, and so on. I don't think in those early days there was much to be worried about for us. Before I left here, though, on the McLean, that's part of the reason I left. I couldn't put up with the discipline, which there was none. It absolutely, it sounded very, and it, I don't know what this place had come to if Mr. Earp hadn't taken a hand.
I'm trying to see here. Well, after you were no longer an official part of the staff, you still had, I know, like so much contact with the settlement school. How did you kind of remain in contact after you weren't a staff member anymore?
You mean after I left?
Yeah, after you left.
Well, when I was here, I didn't have any money, you know. Well, I sold a few poems and got a few books for razor blades and things, and then I began and wrote two or three stories, more than that maybe, that were published in Atlantic and the Yale Review places. And then I began to write a novel, and Viking gave me a contract and wanted me to take a year off and finish it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it didn't need that much time. But, so I did. And I moved back to Jeffrey Lamberger's house. That time was a wagon road here. And we had to get to, they took me as far as they could to Hazard. And all up Carr, we could go to about Lit Carr. And that, they moved me. Mm-hmm. And I never saw him again. I came, Jethro was in charge of the boys, and at one time he and Rainey was in charge, was a house man. She was house mother up here at Eastover. And then he got sick, and I came to see him, and it was Thanksgiving Day. Mm-hmm. And although they were told I was here, they didn't send me anything to eat or invite me down to eat. Mm-hmm. They seemed to have taken umbrage at me leaving, you know, something. I never knew about it. So Jethro, he couldn't eat anything anyway, so I ate his food. I would have to admit they were never more than rather official with me.
When you say they, or who are you talking about? The people?
The administration. Miss Cobb was, though, a wonderful human being.
Who was Miss Cobb?
Miss Cobb, the poet.
What was she like?
She'd more like Miss Stone. She's very red-headed, you know, and fair. And so now all the girls loved her. Everybody loved Miss Cobb. And she had poems, too, you know. She'd been published, had a book of poems. And I didn't mean her. She was sort of... I was never allowed to feel comfortable with them to watch the secretaries, Miss Watts, ever during the time I was here. Maybe they wouldn't want that said, but it's true.
Mm-hmm.
It could have been me. I was very shy, though, and I would read the Bible, read scripture. I'd be once a week, somebody would have a scripture, and the teachers would read, and I wouldn't. And Miss Watts said to me one time, said, "I don't know whether you have any religion or not." Just based on that.
Yeah.
Huh. I think later, she had a different, and I told her one time, we never had a conversation. "Oh, I know," she said. And she, of course, when she retired, we just talked like magpies, both of us, you know. We just never got acquainted. I think she felt she had to be, that there had to be discipline. And she couldn't show any weakness, whatever, you know. Yeah, I think Miss Stone would always have a tea, and this went before she left in the spring or in the fall, I don't remember.
And when you say tea, what was that, sort of like a party or sort of like a social get together?
Iced tea or hot tea with cookies.
Just kind of so people could talk and sit down.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And Ms. Gunn. Ms. Gunn ran they called the cabin over there where they had the looms and things. And people brought in baskets and rugs and things, and they sold them out of there. Some people ordered them. They sold them, and the weaving was done there. And she lived there, Miss Gunn did. Remember, such a thing as going to Hazard, Maybe I might go once a year.
To Hazard?
Mm-hmm.
How long did it take you?
How would I get to Hazard? There's nowhere. Nobody had a car. Nobody here hardly. I remember going once. With Dr. Kelly. I thought if I ever got back alive, I'd... that was in doing the first hitch, the first 6 years. Mm-hmm. See, I was gone for many years, and I came back after the war and stayed seven.
So you did six and then were gone and came.
Well, yeah, I was gone for years.
Mm-hmm.
And then McLean, Miss Watson, yeah, about 2 years, that McLean then became. There again, never had a conversation with McLean. I would just pass a word or two. I told him once when he was here, you know, he'd come back afterwards and we'd talk. I told him, do you realize we never talked? He said, I know, I was afraid of you. What could you possibly be afraid of? I don't know what he meant by that. I wonder if I was ever that stern myself. I wonder if I was. I do know that I kept a quiet library. And that was something in the last itch when the discipline got very bad over at the high school. And, well, probably not what is today, but just anything was...
Right.
Any little thing in those days.
So when you ran the library, what kind of library did you have? What kind of resources did you all have?
We had a good library for the time. It was probably the best high school library in the state. It was probably the best school. It's probably the best school, high school in the state. No school I could imagine had such a group of teachers. College graduates, highly motivated, and we're not here for the money. That didn't make any difference then.
Mm-hmm.
And the library was good. Now, we didn't have any money to buy books, but eventually we did have $400. The county gives $400, and it turned out that was illegal.
The money was illegal?
For them to give a private school money.
Yeah, because it was
even private. Even if the library was serving the county students.
Could anybody in the county come to your library?
Sure. Anybody wanted to borrow a book, I don't care what, it's a regional library. But and they did come in the first years, but toward the end they were always packed with students and they just stopped coming. They didn't come anymore. I'll make 3-4 would, you know, but not generally anymore.
But the students, do they use it a lot, the library?
Oh, it was every day, yeah.
I mean, I imagine
he got too small.
Yeah.
He got too small for the student body. So they had to have library passes, and only a certain number could come. Therefore, they loved to come over there and just sit, you know, and wait for the buses. And I required that they have duties of reading something in magazines or working. This wasn't a place even to, let's say, study your textbooks, except in connection with, you know, library work, because there wasn't enough. Some of the students who needed to come couldn't come because didn't have room for them.
So you liked for them to be doing.
No, I come for library work.
Right.
Or library reading. Now, it was small because all we had was that one room. The other room over here was the children's library. It was a fine little library for children. And the way we got books, though, I would they'd have me make out a list of books, and they'd send them to the DAR or some organization, you know, and they would send the books.
Oh, I know. You're talking about I know the students worked all, like you said, they worked all the time. If they weren't in school, they're constantly doing something. And I read in the, I think it was the Knox County History book, did you ever help with sports or anything on campus? Like basketball or?
I was in Jethro Amberg for some years. Well, during the first years, he was the coach. And I was called the manager. And I traveled with him when they went to play Hazard. Rarely we'd go in the distance. We did go to Benham once, I remember. But I, what I did here was sell tickets. That's all I did. And several years ago, when I first came back here from Moorhead, I'd sometimes meet somebody on the down on the street there, and they'd say, "You remember me?" I'd say, "This big tall man." "No, I don't remember you." And they said, "Well," and he'd give me a name. "Yeah, I remember the name." I said, "I know what became of you." He said, I want to thank you for what you did for me." And I thought maybe I'd put a good book in their hands or something, but no. I believe it was 10 cents for children and 25, maybe 15. For the ball game. If you get in the ball game, and Jeff Smith wouldn't let you in either unless you had the money. All right. As soon as the ball game, there's always a little bunch of Baileys and Cal, in town, didn't have a dime, you know, and any money. Well, they'd hang around there and they'd hear them playing in there. They just killing them, you know, not to be able to see them. That was the only thing going here was basketball.
Right.
So when the principal got out of the way, I'd sneak them in one at a time, and that's what they appreciated.
You'd sneak them in to watch the ball game?
Yeah, I'd sneak them in. And one fellow told me, said one of the Bailey boys, he said, "You know, you used to let me in the ball game." I said, when we won state, I was on the team when we won the state championship."
Well,
I don't meet those people anymore. In fact, those students, I'm reading their obituaries, one last week, Rayma Calhoun. Mm-hmm. That last name, I forget what it was. Let me see what the name is. She lived here. Her husband was here, but she was out with her daughter in Colorado when she died. I think she's Debbie Calhoun's sister. I think she was.
What were other posture, like, I guess, extracurricular or just fun things?
There was nothing there. All I had was basketball. That's all I had. And I'd get out and hiking. And on Saturdays, I had to take them to bowl to court. The gymnasium. They didn't have a gymnasium. Yeah, they did. They had it was the one. It wasn't as big as a gymnasium. That was built after the war. There's another one over there. I don't know what they've done with it now. That's where the fire started 2 years ago. The big gymnasium over there. I take them over there and they play ball.
Mm-hmm.
So Christmas was a big time here. They had the pageant over there. They had the Christmas tree here. Everybody got presents of some sort. And a big dinner. And, but commencement, no, the alumni luncheon was always a sore point.
Why is that?
Nobody, unless you taught in the school building over there, unless you taught, you were not invited, you could not go in to the alumni luncheon. You were not invited. They always sent out little invitations. You had to have an invitation. And the Ms. Gunn and these people, who house mothers were not invited. That was the only big thing, you know, as being the students you had dealt with for several years. You wouldn't get, that's the only time they'd be here. You were not able to go and meet them, you know, or anything. And every time, and they didn't invite me either for years. And it wasn't until I came back here the second time that they finally invited me, and I refused to go. Then I did go a time or two, and I didn't go anymore. You see, for a while here, when they meet here, I wouldn't go because I wasn't invited to begin with. I said, I'm not supposed to be there. They didn't invite me. I don't see the rationale for that.
I don't either.
You see, I don't know that. Well, somebody had to, after all, the students had to eat here.
Yeah.
It meant somebody had to be there. It's true. But they could have taken turns or something or other. They could have done something. I don't understand that.
It's kind of strange.
I'm sorry I didn't mention that, Miss Watts. They were always very, I didn't care myself, but deep down I did, I think,
yeah.
I did. And eventually I realized that I was over in the school building and that I was teaching library science. And anyway, I began to get a little well known because of my stories and things. I never came back here for about 2 years after I left here.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have, in the high school over there, they were right next to the principal's office, was a room. They called it the discarded book room. Books had come in there that hadn't been sorted or been cataloged, something, they'd put them in there. Or anything that belonged to the school, they never had a place to keep it. You know how it is, you have all this junk. It was a junk room, is what it was. Well, every teacher had 1 hour off during the day. You taught from 8 o'clock in the morning to 3, maybe 3:30. But you were allowed off at 12 at noon, and the town children would go to town and go home, some of them. And eventually, though, the second time, they didn't let anybody leave the. They had a lunch room then, didn't let anybody leave all day long. An mile off, the library room was a study hall. And some teacher then would take over for the study hall. So I would go in my room in there and write.
In the junk room?
And one time I had a fellowship in the north, and I was going to be here in time for school, but I wasn't here in time for the first faculty meeting. And the principal wouldn't know where I was, and they might not have known where I was. I don't know. Surely somebody did. I was up east and having a fellowship up there somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a day or two I couldn't be. And he said, James Dale goes, he goes in that room and he locks the door, and no, God only knows what he does in there.
I'm sure he said that. Oh, goodness.
I remember I was in there one day, and you could hear everything that happened in the principal's office. They see it's a stone wall, but you could hear everything. And at that time, I was publishing things in Atlantic, and we didn't have many visitors, I would admit, but once in a while, there'd be some strangers come through here.
Mm-hmm.
And when they'd come to the settlement, they'd hear the settlement, maybe. But here's a man is wife, came to the principal's office, knocked, and I heard him ask him, said, we wonder if it's be possible for us to speak to James Steele. We hate to disturb him. Said, yeah, he's here, so you can talk to him. Says, yeah, you're disturbing me.
That's what the principal said.
Yeah. And toward the end, he would not have anything to do with me. Yeah. I remember seeing him out on that walkway out there and started, and he'd turn around and go back if he saw me coming. Hmm. I know why. I don't want to record.
Well, that's fine.
I don't want to record it.
Well, Mr. Steele, it's about 20 after, if you want to go eat some.
20 for what?
20 after 5.
Yeah, we better go. Cut it off.